Husker Doc Talk Podcast number 8. The Huskers steamroll Miami. Good to have you along for another Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by our good friends at the Remington Trophy. And today, the Husker Doc Talk podcast originates from our friends at the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson in Omaha. Good to have you along. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American and who should be in the Nebraska Hall of Fame, Dr. Rob Zadiska, who doesn't have a voice today. Why don't you have a voice today?
I have spent so much time talking with former Huskers over the last 2.5 days. It's insane.
You know, you will get more to you about the 1994 reunion and talking with former players, but we also have another former player who is in the Nebraska Hall of Fame because he was a first-team All-Conference player, because he was a first-team All-American, our good friend Dave Remington. Welcome back, Dave.
Well, thank you, guys. Good to be here.
You know, Rob should be in the Nebraska Hall of Fame, shouldn't he?
I mean, yeah, why not? That whole team should be in the Nebraska.
Travis has a campaign. Do you know what we need to do? We need to have like a campaign to get the pipeline as a unit inducted.
Now that would be super cool.
Because you think about it, football. You talk about it being a team sport. And I know, I mean, the defensive line will talk about being a unit, the linebackers being a unit, defensive backs being a unit. I don't know. Maybe Dave can comment on this, because as a center, you're kind of the captain of the line. There is few position groups in football where you have to coordinate and work together on every single play. I mean, nobody has to work more intricately and closely together than the offensive line. I think the pipeline should be inducted as a unit. Of course, that's not much of a stretch because 3 of the 5 are already in the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame.
So are we talking the 94 pipeline, the 95 pipeline, or the 97 pipeline?
Oh, I'm not talking about our backups. I'm talking about just the 94 guys, the pipeline.
Oh, man.
So, although, truthfully, I think most of the guys from 95 and 97 are in the Nebraska Hall of Fame already,
and
too.
That's why you need to be in the Nebraska Hall of Fame. And let's start, you know, before we get to the reunion time, let's talk about the 41-31 win, Nebraska over Miami. And you talk about the offensive line. That win over Miami was old school. That was power running football. It was try to stop us if you can. And Amir Abdullah did everything he could. He was running like a man possessed, and the offensive line did a great job for him. I mean, it was just – that was an old-school win and an old-school rivalry.
It was. I thought it was an awfully well-played game by Nebraska's offensive line. And part of me almost – I kind of had a little bit of a knee-jerk response when I was watching the game about how incredibly well a guy like Amir Abdullah was playing. And you looked at him. You looked at the tackles he was breaking. The guy gets low. He drops those hips. He makes those cuts. The guy can contort his body to just some incredible angles. When you see guys hitting him at the knee, at the hips, I mean, hits that would normally take a running back down, and the guy just wouldn't go down. But the thing is, though, I always went back to the fact that, you know what, if the play's not blocked correctly initially, he's not going to get open. And while I understand that a guy like Abdullah does make a lot of plays himself, and the guy creates a lot of holes when there really aren't any. At the same time, too, that was probably one of the best blocking performances up front that I've seen from a Nebraska football team. Now, there was a couple of times in the game when you look, they're down there at the end of the first half when they had a first and goal inside the 5-yard line. I would have liked to have seen more power plays. And to me, I guess in my mind, that's more of a play calling issue than it necessarily is a performance issue up front. But I understand why they call the plays they do. There's a play earlier in the first half where they left Amir Abdullah wide open in the end zone for what would have been a touchdown. Actually, I think it was on that same drive, actually. But I'd like to see them stick with that style of offense. I think they could have pushed it more during that game even. I think there is times where I think as an offensive coordinator, you have this notion of, well, we've run it 6 out of the last 8 plays. I think we need to work a little something different in to keep the defense on their toes. And I don't think you really need to do that. If it's working, you keep punching them in the face like that, and it wears them down. So if I've got one criticism at all, and it's kind of a minor criticism when you look at the number of times you ran the ball, I would have liked to have seen more running.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
You know, the exciting part about that game was that they were answering the call every time that Miami scored. Nebraska would take the ball and march down the field methodically, running the football, putting it on the offensive line's backs, and with Amir Abdullah, their best ball carrier, or their best threat was getting the ball. That's how it should go.
I mean, I'm trying to think. Have we seen a time in the last 10 years even that Nebraska has run the football like this that really brought back the memories of what power football was?
Well, there's, you know, truthfully, when you say that, the thing that I was thinking about watching that game was, at least offensively, I can go back and think about the last 3 years against Michigan State. If there is one team, and I find it hugely surprising when you look at Michigan State's defenses in the last half decade here, if there is one team that Nebraska's offensive line has owned, it's been Michigan State. Now, last year they had so many turnovers that just absolutely destroyed Nebraska's offensive performance in that game and put the defense in a horrible spot. But Nebraska has pushed Michigan State's defense around. And when I look at that game last night, that was one of the first things that went through my head was, geez, you know what? Nebraska, since we've joined the Big Ten, that's the one school that Nebraska's offensive line has kind of had the number of. It's been Michigan State. And so we got them in a couple of weeks here. That watching that game last night gave me an incredible amount of confidence in the fact that we might be able to go up to East Lansing and pull a win out up there. And that was something that, if you had looked at it going into this season, I think was one of the big question marks on the schedule. Are we going to be able to get a win in East Lansing? Now, the defense, I think there's still some questions there. But at least offensively, and to answer your question about running the ball, Nebraska's done the power football thing, and they've had the ability to do that style of offense, and they've done it against really good teams, really good defenses in the past. And that's why, like I said, I think you got a guy like Tim Beck, who I think is a really, really smart guy. I think he's got a great playbook. I think the guy just outthinks himself too much, and I think he needs to just stick with the power of football. It's like Dave said, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Well, and that's going to be my follow-up to you, Dave, is that is it the inconsistency of not just sticking with a power football game that drives a lot of people nuts, is because you see the success it has against a Michigan State or like a Miami, and why don't you just do that every single game?
To be a good running football team, you got to run the football, and you got to give it a chance, and you got to be persistent with it. And I think that they have enough talent elsewhere on the receiver's ends and the quarterback that they're going to They're going to try different things. You know, they have almost too many weapons back there. Back when we played, we ran the football because that was our identity. I don't think they have that type of identity yet, but it's good to see them giving it a shot. You know, when you're an offensive lineman, all you can ask for is give me some opportunities to move the football and be part of this football game. As a pass blocker, I can block all day, but if these guys don't catch it, the quarterback doesn't throw the right guy, it doesn't mean anything. So this is a way to get the offensive line into the game, and I think it should help them down the road.
Amir Abdullah passes Johnny Rogers last night on the all-purpose yards list. He's on his way possibly to becoming the all-time leading rusher in Nebraska history. This is going to be a tough question for both of you. And, Dave, I'll start with you first. Amir Abdullah will be on a lot of Heisman list. How does he compare with the running back you played with and Mike Rozier?
Well, I think Amir is one of the best running backs. I think he's probably deserving of Heisman mention right now, and I think that he really ran hard last night. And but I personally think that Mike Rozier is the best running back I ever had a chance to play with, and I think he's a proven commodity over and over again. But you can't argue with what Amir did last night. He's a leader. He's a flat-out leader. He's a guy you can give the football to. He's a guy that the guys are rallying around. So I think he's a great football player. He could be worthy of a Heisman Trophy if these guys can run the table here.
Well, you bring up leadership. I mean, was Mike the leadership guy? Is that what makes Amir the total package, that he's also a leader on the field? Was Mike a leader on the field, or was he just a God-given talent?
Mike was a great teammate, but he wasn't a vocal leader like Amir is a vocal leader. He's kind of runs the locker room. There, it seems like Mike wasn't that type. He was the type of guy, you give him the football, he's going to score.
Rob, we're going to bring up a guy most Husker fans want to block out of their minds, and that would be Lawrence Phillips. And I've said this. Of all the backs that I've seen in Nebraska history, there's two that I saw personally that impressed me more than anybody, and that was Lawrence Phillips and Amon Green. Lawrence Phillips had, besides his personal problems, was an extremely gifted back. How would you compare, or can you even compare, Lawrence Phillips to Amir Abdullah?
It's a little bit of an apples and oranges kind of comparison. I mean, they actually run with a little bit of a different style. Well, you know what? I say that. It's not much of a difference. Amir's probably has a little bit more of a juke and slash style to him, but he'll put his head down and just dive into a pile and push a pile forward. And one of the things I've always really liked about Abdullah is the fact that, and you'll hear this coach speak phraseology often, the guy falls forward. You don't see him get hit and bounce backwards. He gets hit and he always falls forward yard and a half every single time, and that makes a difference in the running game when you're talking about, you know, if it's third and three, if it's second and two, you know, sometimes a yard and a half is huge. The guy falls forward, so he's got that power running ability. You know, they're two different running backs. I will say this. I mean, I didn't block for Amon Green. You know, I watched him play. I've met him. He's a great guy. He was an incredible talent. I have played with few guys that were better than Lawrence Phillips. When he was on, it just, the guy was darn near unstoppable. And I mean, he was such an incredible, incredible talent. And when you look at what Lawrence Phillips did in Lincoln, I mean, you had him basically as a backup role as a true freshman in 93, and he still was very, very good. It was the 1994 season is really where you saw him, and that was, he was a true sophomore that year. The guy put 1,700 yards out there, and I'm not even sure he got first-team all-conference. I mean, it was one of these things where, in hindsight, he almost got overlooked for the amount of talent he had. And, I say this with sort of mixed feelings. Sometimes I wonder if the offensive line that year got too much credit for what we did offensively when you looked at what Lawrence was able to do. He played, what, 2-3 non-conference games before the incident after the Michigan State game, his junior season, and then he came back for the bowl game, and that was it. So that last year in Lincoln, you only had a couple of these flashes of brilliance from him. But, I mean, he was probably, if you wanted me to pick somebody based purely on talent alone, I'm going with Lawrence Phillips. I mean, if you ask me, you know what, you're building a team, and I need somebody who's going to be a little bit of a rock in the leadership position as well, but can still do incredible things carrying the football, I'm picking Amir Abdullah.
Well, I think every Husker fan will agree, and I think you two will as well, and it's been a long time since we've talked about a strong person in that I-back position, in the running back position. It's good to see Nebraska have a strong – I mean, Rex Burkhead was good. I don't think he's as good as Amir Abdullah, but it's nice to have a strong person anchoring that running game.
Well, it is, and I think you're seeing him. He's playing with a style that just, I mean, the guy is just the walking embodiment of a leader. And we haven't seen that, and it's rare that we've had somebody be able to step up into that position. And you think about the past several years offensively for Nebraska. Rex Burkhead was probably the best guy Nebraska had in that role the last several years, but he spent a good chunk of that senior year nursing injuries, and it was hard to get him on the field consistently game in and game out to really show that. I mean, you had Taylor Martinez, which, God bless him, I think the guy sold his soul to the program, definitely sold his body to the program. But he wasn't a guy who was going to be that, I'm going to step up and lead this team type of guy. Now, I think a guy like Tommy Armstrong definitely could be in that role, but last year you had him as a freshman. This year you got him as a sophomore. He's a quarterback, and for all intents and purposes, I think a lot of people I've talked with say that they do look at Tommy as a leader, and he's got some very good leadership qualities. But you've got a guy like Amir who's just stepped up in that leadership role, and that's something that I think that offense has really, really lacked the last several years.
Now, the offense, I think we can all agree, is pretty potent. And if it does what it did against Miami, it's going to have success the rest of the season. And what happens in a 41-31 win and you put up as many yards as they did, especially in the running game, people tend to forget about what happened on the defensive side of the ball. Miami only ran 62 plays last night, guys, and they gave up, and Nebraska gave up 400-plus yards. Is a defense, and Dave, I'll start with you, is the defense going to be a problem as this season goes along? I mean, are there defensive problems for Nebraska?
Well, yeah, I think there's a few problems. I think that they're getting better. I think linebackers, they had some problems with missed tackles last night. They're getting a little chippy out there yesterday, too. They got to watch that. And really, Miami went down the field and scored pretty much on a consistent basis most of the day. I mean, Nebraska was able to counter that with their own scores, but it wasn't pretty. I mean, it wasn't pretty. Nebraska's got a lot of work to do on defense still.
Rob?
You know, I agree. Now, but, you know, you make the comment, Dave, that they're getting better. And when I look at what a team like Miami did against Nebraska, you see the missed tackles. There's a number of missed assignments, too. I mean, you can always tell the missed assignments when you see the safety walk over the linebacker and he's got his hands out to the side with that, what the heck was that? Kind of expression. And so those kinds of problems, though, tend to be experience problems. They tend to be understanding what you're supposed to be doing type of problems. And so that's a situation where those are what I would consider correctable problems. Assuming you've got guys who are coachable, guys who are even remotely intelligent enough to understand what they're supposed to be doing in their role within the defense, those are fixable problems. And so, yeah, there's problems, but I think it's experience issues. And that was something that I think people had concern with this defense, where you lost a couple of upperclassmen out of that linebacking core. You lost some guys with the transfers, the injuries that Nebraska's had this year. That's an issue that...
Good catch, by the way.
You saved my life.
We were kind of in the beer garden of the Benson Brewery, and the umbrella about came crumbling down on Dave. Your reflexes are like cat-like, man. You could still play on that offensive line.
You know, I say that, but I'm not sure my lower back or my knees would agree.
That does. You're right. That gets you in the Hall of Fame no matter what.
Right there.
So finish your defensive.
No, but it's, you know what? It's just they've lost some seniors. They've lost some experience. They've lost some talent with these guys transferring and with some of these injuries here. And I think all of a sudden you've got a group of guys that I think are still pretty talented. I mean, especially when you throw a guy like Randy Gregory into the mix. Here's the example that I'd like to give. Okay, look at that very last scoring drive by Miami. Nebraska gives up several big plays. They get down on the goal line, and they force fourth down. And Miami's trying to punch it in to just get some points and bring the score a little bit closer. Nebraska took them to fourth down with three really, really, really good, well-executed athletic plays. I mean, you had, geez, was it Malik Collins who blew up the middle for that first tackle on the first and goal play, I think it was. These guys are athletic. They're smart. They were reading the offense. They were playing good, hard assignment defense. And then on fourth down, there's a little bit of lapse, and they let that guy get outside for the touchdown on that last play. And it's like, son of a gun. So it's you see flash of brilliance, flash of brilliance, flash of brilliance, boneheaded play. So the potential's there. I think the truly
– Yeah, but as you get deeper in this Big Ten, I mean, Wisconsin's –
And that's
an MF-er, man. I mean,
well,
Wisconsin's solid. Thing. Michigan State at Michigan State.
That's the thing. I worry about going up and having to face a Gary Anderson coach team at Camp Randall. That's an absolute snake pit. It's against a very good team that should have beat LSU. And it's same thing with Michigan State. You've got an incredibly well-coached team and you're going at Michigan State, I got to be honest, it's just not the same as Camp Randall. But it's you're going up and playing a very good team in their home stadium, and that's going to be tough to do.
Before we transition to the Big Ten, I want to ask both of you this, because it was pretty active on Facebook last night, pretty active on Twitter as well during the game, and that was the five personal foul penalties against Miami. You know, people are coming out calling them thugs. Nebraska fans, for the first time that I can remember, booed a team coming off the field instead of applauding them. They didn't shake hands after the game. The Miami assistant coaches got them off the field. Deep down, though, isn't that what Nebraska fans wanted? Didn't they? In some sick, perverted way, isn't that exactly what they wanted? They wanted thug you, don't you think?
I don't know how to.
It's true.
I got to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I mean, I'm sitting there reading, go, this is exactly what you wanted. You didn't want to ever like Miami.
Well, here's the thing, because I had a lot of people ask. I mean, you talked to – this is not just me. This is any Nebraska football player. Our phones and email accounts have been absolutely lighting up just this whole past week, 2 weeks. And, you know, the storyline that everybody's wanted to go with is, you know, how reminiscent of this is this of the Miami games of old? How, I mean, is this something that reminds you of when you played back in 94, when you played Miami after the 91 season? You think about as a kid watching.
Is this thug light?
It is. I mean, that's the question I've been asking.
Did you see on the interception, Gregory just took out the quarterback as an offensive lineman, and you're trained to, you see, well, especially in the pros, but in that type of offense, if you see your quarterback get hit, you're going to retaliate. And that's what happened. They went back after Gregory and smacked him around.
Well, yeah, it was chippy both sides.
I think most people thought, this is an Al Golden coach team. And I think Al Golden showed them all these tapes of what was going on with the Nebraska-Miami rivalry, and they felt they had to live up to it. I think even though Nebraska fans booed these guys, and I actually love the fact that they didn't shake hands after the game, because it adds just more to that, to the lore that is Nebraska-Miami.
I think it does. And the point I was going to make is I'm going back over the last week and a half going, boy, Noah, this is different. I mean, it's different teams. It's different times. It's new coaches. It's different players. I mean, the fans watch. I mean, the last time Nebraska played Miami was 2001. That was over a dozen years ago. The time before that was eight, 7 years prior to that. I mean, it's just so much time has gone by and so much has changed. It's a different era and it's different teams. And then we get out there and all of a sudden we got brawls in the middle of the field. Yeah, I think old times.
I think Miami is trying to bring back some of their toughness. You know, they're called the Candy Canes now. They're not called the Hurricanes. So,
ooh, that's harsh.
That is harsh. But that's not me saying. That's their ex-players. That's their old former players saying this is not the same type of team. So they're trying. I think as players, you get an opportunity to play one of your arch rivals. That's something you had some success against in the past. That you might be able to intimidate. Well, they came in here and tried to do that stuff to Nebraska, and this is not the Nebraska of 2001. This isn't the new Nebraska team, and they don't. The Miami team simply doesn't have the talent they had back in the day. So,
which I would say to a former player, there are few things harsher on a current player's ears than commentary from former players. That always stings. So I can understand that as a Miami player. That's something you don't want to hear.
Of course, the Husker Doc Talk podcast brought to you by the Remington Trophy, and the man that trophy is named after is with us today. And Dave, your presentation is coming up January 17th at the Rococo Theater. Rob and I both agree. We've gone to several trophy presentations, several sports banquets, and your event at the Rococo Theater is really first class. And I know there's still sponsorship availability. There's still table availability, single tickets availability. And you get those at RemingtonTrophy.com. But talk about what it goes into planning that event and how first class class you like it to be as you sit there laughing.
As I laugh, because it's like planning my own birthday party each year, you know. But it's a great fundraiser, and I am real appreciative of everybody that supports us. This is our 15th year. It's getting, the award is getting a lot of traction with the ESPN. Eventually we might get on we'll get off the red carpet show and get on the regular show. So, you know, we're getting some traction, and it's a lot of fun. It really is. We get a chance to, it gives me a chance to come back here, see old friends, talk to old coaches, and just be part of the community in Nebraska.
You know what I like about the Remington Trophy? It's not the political game that a lot of those other trophies are. I mean, you have a formula based on All-American teams and who wins. I mean, you basically have to earn the trophy. It's not who sends out the most mailings, who's got the better Twitter account, all that. I mean, it's really an earned trophy, not a political trophy.
Well, it's based on three All-American teams, and whoever the consensus of that three is going to be the winner of the trophy. So there's no, you know, here voting committee that's going to do this. Well, there is a committee when we had four All-American teams that we use, if there was a tie, then we would go back to our committee and determine the winner. But watching a center is a difficult thing to do for all the teams that are out there. I think we have over 50-some guys on the watch list, so it's real difficult to watch them all. This way, we can just plan the event and let the formula figure it out.
I got to ask you, because the watch list came out before the season. When's the next breakdown? I hate to put you on the spot, but I don't know if you know when the next breakdown is.
Usually around... I think the award is going to be named probably December 11th down in Orlando. So I'm guessing about a week before that.
Okay.
The first week in December, we'll come up with the finals.
Okay.
So
again, RemingtonTrophy.com. There are sponsorship availability. There is table availability. There is single ticket availability. I'm going to tell you, it's a who's who of college players, especially former Huskers, a who's who of former pro players. There will be a Gerald R. Ford Award winner, all sorts of good stuff. So you will not want to miss it. It's the Remington Trophy, and you get more at RemingtonTrophy.com. Moving now, as Nebraska moves on, the conference season starts, and they start the conference season with Illinois. Illinois was a winner yesterday, a very successful Big Ten day yesterday, which the Big Ten needed. But you know, where do you think Nebraska ranks, especially in the West Division right now? If I had to rank the West Division, I'd put Wisconsin, I'd put Nebraska, and then I'd put Iowa. Iowa had a good win over Pitt yesterday, but Nebraska is still, to me, not the best team in that West Division. Even though it's undefeated, I'd still put Michigan State right there. But Nebraska's a close second there.
Until Nebraska goes up to Camp Randall, that's going
to
be the deciding.
Well, they go to East Lansing before they go to Camp Randall.
I know. It's an out-of-division game, so if there's a tiebreaker, it goes to that, I believe. So, I know they got to play Michigan State first. I know the total record counts as far as figuring that goes.
I'm getting my tickets ready for Indianapolis. I don't care what you guys say.
Look at that. That's optimism. That's optimism.
I'm always optimistic.
I got to be honest. I was watching Big Ten Network, and they got the you can secure at-cost tickets now. Going through the Big Ten conference.
But really, what do you have to lose? Because the Big Ten, to me, is wide open. Not just the West Division, but these. I mean, both divisions are pretty wide open right now.
West is going to come down to Wisconsin and Michigan. I'm sorry, it was going to come down to Wisconsin and Nebraska.
Yep.
I loved what Beathard did yesterday against Pitt coming in at the second half. I thought that was a much better win.
And you're talking about the Iowa game.
The Iowa game that I think a lot of people gave him credit for. I'm just not sold on the Hawkeyes yet. And the only reason I say that is because I think they have lost too much off their defense.
Especially that linebacker. That linebacking core, you look
and
back
that was what killed. Yeah. That was what killed Nebraska and Lincoln last year. Yeah. Where those linebackers just, you had three guys. I say single-handedly, triple-handedly destroyed Nebraska. Those guys, that unit's just not there.
But I think the Big Ten is wide open, which is a huge opportunity for Nebraska and should be a huge motivational boost moving forward. And it's nice that they get a start the conference against a patsy. And Illinois is bad. I don't care what anybody says. You can try to sell it to me. Illinois is not a very good football
Illinois
team.
Illinois is bad.
It's a really bad
Indiana,
football team.
Indiana, I mean, they're knocking off ranked SEC teams now.
I'd like to be Mizzou
right
now.
You know, Indiana offensively, Kevin Wilson has a good offensive team. He reminds me of Bill Callahan. I know people just shudder when they hear that name. Bill Callahan had good offensive football teams. He refused to budge on firing Kevin Cosgrove and improving his defense.
He'd score 60 points and still lose by two touchdowns.
And that's Kevin Wilson's problem at Indiana. But I mean, I think right now you look at the Big Ten, and it's wide open in both divisions. I don't think Ohio State's that great. Michigan, as we saw yesterday, is not that great of a football team.
Michigan's in a free fall mode. Brady Hoke, I feel bad because I think Brady Hoke's a great coach, but I see no way he holds on to his job.
You were even saving that before we started, Dave.
Well, you could, you know, I mean, he's lost more hair than you guys.
Man.
No, I'm just kidding.
That hurts.
That's a lot of hair.
But I don't think it's a stretch now. I think before the season started, in most prognosticators, and I think we were in this, in Nebraska couldn't win the Big Ten.
I don't think they were in the conversation. I think people were thinking, was it Wisconsin in the West, and it was going to come down to whoever came out of that matchup in East Lansing with Michigan State and Ohio State was going to win the East, And then whoever won the East was probably going to win the title game.
But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think Nebraska is seriously in the mix, and I think even who wins the West is a serious contender for the Big Ten title.
At this point now, I agree.
I mean, Wisconsin went for 644 yards rushing yesterday, guys. 644. I know they're playing, Bowling Green? But come on, 644?
I know. I'm just it's kind of like – we had the conversation about – how do you judge Nebraska after its first three games? I mean, I didn't think there could be anybody worse than Florida Atlantic as an opponent. And then Nebraska goes out to Fresno in horrible weather conditions and plays a team that, they were worse than Florida Atlantic. So we had no test. I think that was the same thing for Wisconsin. You can't count that game and look at it and say, hey, look what they did against Bowling Green. I could sit here and say, forget Wisconsin. How about that whooping that Michigan State put on Eastern Michigan yesterday?
Yeah, that's pretty...
Yeah, you know what? That Michigan State team, they've got this locked up. If you saw what they did...
Do directional Michigan teams ever give anybody a good game?
It is. If you saw what they did against the power... I don't know if it's the Chippewas or what, but whoever Eastern Michigan
that would
is,
be Western Michigan.
Close enough. I'm just saying, it's, you know what, you can't look at that game and tell me that tells you remotely anything other than what Nebraska's wins over Florida Atlantic and Fresno did. They did to an incredibly overmatched team what they should have done to an incredibly overmatched team.
And that's what you want to see out of your football team.
You do. You don't want to see the last minute wins over McNeese State.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which still might be one of the best teams Nebraska's played this year.
Who's the best team Nebraska's played? McNeese State, ranked 6th in 1AA, but they're the best team.
I think they're up to 4th now.
Are they up to 4th now? They won yesterday.
I got to double check. I think they're 4th, though.
Dave, thoughts on the Big Ten race? I mean, would you agree with this? Nebraska would start...
As you say, it's wide open, and we're going to have to see. I'll play the coach card here and just play 1 week at a time. They got to beat Illinois first, and then they go up to East Lansing. We'll see what they're made of back then.
Before we go, I got to ask you about, have you guys turned into Big Ten guys yet? Or are you guys still partial to the old Big 8, Big 12 schools? Is it hard?
Okay. I'm an outlier, and that's where I'm going. I got both my parents graduated from Michigan State. They grew up in Iowa. My mom's entire side of her family, it's all Iowa fans. I got my first cousin. We were trading texts yesterday. He's an Ohio State grad. His wife's an Ohio State grad. I grew up in a Big Ten family. I hated football because my dad would watch those early Big Ten games on Saturday mornings, and I couldn't watch cartoons for Pete's sake.
I mean, you have an award in the Big Ten named after you. Never played one Big Ten football game.
Great. I laugh when they said, "You want to be part of the?" Yeah, sure. What is the Big Ten, and how many teams are there? I think my mentality for us the Big Ten is this. It was such a joke that I got kind of like circle the wagons mentality. I was real happy. I think they were 12-1 yesterday as a conference. So I want whatever Nebraska's part of to be legitimate. In order for them to get where they want to be, that conference has got to step up and play. And to watch Indiana beat Missouri yesterday, that was, you know, that was kind of gratifying on a couple fronts because we saw an old Big 12 rival go down in heap against one of the weaker teams in the Big Ten.
It's been odd over the last couple of weeks to see other Big Ten teams root for other Big Ten. That never happened in the Big 12. You never saw Nebraska rooting for Oklahoma or Texas.
Never.
But now you have Big Ten teams rooting for other Big Ten teams, knowing that you need that validation of making your conference relevant.
You know, I got to be honest
with
you.
Those Chippewas. Go.
Actually, I got to be honest with you. Early in the 94 season, I remember hanging out at Terry Keneally's senior day party, and they had it was the Colorado Michigan Cordell Stewart to Michael Westbrook Hail Mary game up in the big house on TV on like one of those they just put it on a large white wall, and I remember the entire room filled with Nebraska people going nuts when Colorado nailed that no time left Hail Mary to beat Michigan, which was one of those things where I think even before they joined the conference, I think Nebraska hated Michigan because, like most normal human beings, everybody hates Michigan. although I got to throw the caveat in there, which probably a group makes me agree with you when you say that. It's one of those things. We needed Colorado undefeated, so when we kick their ass, it'd get counted for something.
Yeah, Dave Ragnew has been with us today. Of course, every week, Dr. Rob is with us. If you are new to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, you can always find us on iTunes as well as Stitcher. And if you're following a lot of websites out there, I want to thank Husker Max for pushing out the podcast as well, a good supporter of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. I want to thank the Benson Brewery for hosting us today. It's a great place in the heart of Benson, right on Maple Street. Stop by their beer garden. They have movies on Sunday night, while weather permits, live acoustic music on Wednesday, and the best craft brew you can find all week long. It's the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, for Dave Remington, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.